about to get the recording started. Just one moment. For the record, this is the Registrar Stakeholder Group, scheduled from 1300 to 1400 local time.
Okay, well, now the recording has started. We are now dealing with the ATRT, which is led by Brian Cute. Brian, over to you.
Thank you, Michele, and thank you for your time today. Since we have fairly limited time, I'll be brief. We've provided some questions to the group. The questions are a guide for our discussion. Please comment on any or all of them to the extent we have time. Don't be bound by them. If there are any specific issues beyond these questions that are top of mind for you as it pertains to accountability and transparency review team work, please raise them. Our timeline is we're going to issue proposed draft recommendations in mid-October. That'll go out for public comment. We're going to issue our final report to the board December 31st, or by December 31st. If the group wishes to get inputs into our process, that factor into the proposed draft recommendations at issue in mid-October, I would suggest getting that input to us no later than mid-September. So that's our rough timeline. We're here to listen, and the floor is open. Back to you, Michele.
Thanks, Brian. Just by way of clarification for those of us who have issues with all these wonderful acronyms, what exactly is your purview?
Sure. The Accountability and Transparency Review Team is set up under the Affirmation of Commitments. Part of the Affirmation of Commitments set up a series of periodic reviews for ICANN. There are four specific reviews identified. One was Accountability and Transparency. This is the second such ATRT. One was on Who Is. One was on Security, Stability, and Resiliency. And another, which has not been undertaken yet, was consumer and competition, or consumer choice and competition. That review is going to be undertaken once the new TLDs have launched. So there have been three prior reviews.
So yours is transparency.
Ours is accountability and transparency.
Okay, so this is the second accountability and transparency. So this, and are there any boundaries on this, or is this across every single aspect of ICANN's activities?
Paragraph 9.1 of the Affirmation of Commitment sets out our scope. Board of Directors, public participation, the role and effectiveness of the GAC, and Alan?
PDP process, yeah. Cross-community deliberations, and one more thing that I can't remember.
And lastly, we are going to have to provide recommendations on the review process itself, whether it's working, whether it's not, how it can be made more effective. That's our scope of work.
And we are also charged with reviewing the other two review implementations. So we are looking at the implementation of the Who Is and the SSR review. We're not allowed to make new recommendations, but we have to judge whether ICANN has taken them seriously and has implemented them.
Okay, thank you. I'll open a queue. Anybody want to jump in? Or do you all think that ICANN functions with fantastic accountability and transparency? Okay, that was a leading question, sorry. Nobody has any questions?
We have a number of questions in front of you. What's really important to this team, as you might imagine, is that any conclusions we reach be fact-based. As you might imagine, when we go around the community from constituency to constituency, advisory group to advisory group, we hear a lot of different concerns. We hear a lot of similar concerns. Concerns are concerns, but if you have a serious question about accountability and transparency, we need to see data and facts. So If there are specific issues related to these questions, we'd love to hear from you. And certainly, if you can point us to documentation that provides a basis of those concerns, that's really important.
Alan, go ahead.
If you have no other comments, question 14 asks, do you operate transparently and accountably?
I'm half tempted to reply to that, but I won't.
Michele, may I?
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, actually, in direct response to that, I'd say that we probably are more transparent and accountable than many of the other groups, because this group is largely composed of people who are commercial competitors. And, so there's a certain protocol of the way that we keep an eye on what we're doing as a group and how we're interacting with each other. I hate to come in when the movie's halfway over and ask what's going on, but this independent expert, what sort of a person is this independent expert? What sort of qualifications do they have, or is this going to be someone we've all heard of before?
So we've put out an RFP, and we are just developed criteria. We're going to be looking for an independent expert who can advise on the PDP process itself. That will be the scope of work at a high level. We'll be looking for expertise, an understanding of policy-making processes. Some familiarity with ICANN and the PDP itself will be an important criteria. We have a very short period of time. This expert has probably about a month and a half to 2 months, given our calendar, to do a review and provide a sound analysis, hopefully. But typical criteria in terms of experience, CVs, diversity, and understanding of policymaking processes more broadly are among the criteria we're going to look at when selecting the expert.
Yeah, well, good luck with that, because I think in general, familiarity with ICANN and independence are two things that, are in tension with each other.
Well understood.
Okay, anybody have any other points they want to raise? Oh, Volker.
Yes, to question one, whether the Genius OPDP process is effective. I think the process in itself is effective, and it's one of the best processes that we have for making policies that ensures that all the communities are heard and can get their viewpoints across to find a compromise amongst the stakeholder groups and in the end reach the best result that is acceptable to all. However, I think that when the PDP process is circumvented or when there's other avenues available for certain stakeholder groups that, for example, could go directly to the board and have the board make an interim decision, then the incentive for those stakeholder groups to reach consensus in the PDP process is greatly diminished, and therefore may lead to the perception that this PDP process is flawed. So it might be beneficial to close those separate avenues to ensure that the PDP process is as effective as it can be, and that all groups that participate in that process are properly incentivized to come to a decision or come to a compromise solution.
Put myself in the queue, and I'll come back to you, Alan. Just looking at the questions there, I mean, one that does kind of leap out to me is with respect to the public comment process and whether that's functional or not. The one comment I'd like to make personally is I think part of the issue there is even when a body of work, be that a PDP or anything else which is open to comment, can have a direct and tangible, concrete impact on stakeholders, and I mean stakeholders in the broadest possible sense, sometimes it's couched in such highly technical language with such horrible acronyms and ICANNese, it's very, very hard for an outsider who is not involved in the day-to-day circus that is ICANN to understand what the hell it's being asked to comment on. So, you see comment periods. I think there were two recently on stuff related to IANA. In one case, I think there was no comments received. In the other one, there might have been two. And you know, people have no idea. There's no context given many of the times. Or the context that they give is so ICANN-specific. It isn't kind of, okay, this work is about how easy it is for you to choose a new domain registrar, you know, in relation to, say, domain transfers. There's a lack of plain English or plain French or plain Spanish or whichever language you want. It's very, very hard for people to actually get involved, to engage. So you end up in a situation where I go to 3 ICANN meetings a year, and much as I love looking across the table at Olivier, because he always does dress up nicely and everything, it's always the same people. You know, there's the same group of people who turn up time and time again. And how do you actually get new people to come into this entire thing to engage actively? I mean, there's a lot of stuff being talked about by the new CEO with respect to outreach and engagement, but he seems to be focusing on governments and big business. There doesn't seem to be anything with respect to, you know, the mass unwashed, I suppose. I think it was Alan was next.
Yeah, I had a follow-up question for Volker. You say the process is working. One of our questions we're raising is, what does working mean? PDPs, in my experience, end up having one of three types of results. They either, you know, come up with good recommendations on whatever the problem is, if it was a problem, or the group can't really come to real agreement and they end up with some very wishy-washy results, or they stalemate. Are all of those good outcomes? Do you consider all of those working?
Well, as we've seen in various presentations during the week in the GNSO that we've seen, only one PDP in the last 2 years came out in a real stalemate, and that was a very contentious issue on vertical integration, where a lot of interest was there by a lot of parties to keep the status quo, so they had no interest in changing anything, and others wanted it to change to the status quo. So you had very diametrically opposed positions, which was hard to come to a compromise. However, I think, answering your question directly, all three results can be a successful PDP and can be a successful result. A PDP that comes out in no change can be a proper reflection of the opinion of the community that the current situation is good enough and that the proposed alternatives would not improve on that. So yes, even if a PDP does not produce any results, that can be a desirable result.
Olivier?
Thank you very much, Michele. Olivier Crepin-Ablon, ATRT2. Just wanted to follow up on your comments regarding the public comment process. Would you have any recommendations as to how to improve it? So we're aware there's a problem. What can we do to improve this?
Thanks, Olivier. I mean, one of the things I think is investing in, you know, simplifying the language and providing a more kind of non-ICANN context. I mean, the context, the impact on these things. I mean, it's you know, a lot of the time it's technically correct what's there, but it's not easy for somebody to look at the list of public comments and to actually understand what the hell it refers to. IRTP Part D PDP, prime example. I mean, most of the people in this room probably know what that refers to, but ask my mother. Now, okay, my mother's a bad example, since obviously all her domains are managed by me and I provide her customer service. But, you know, if you want to ask, somebody could be impacted by that who would love to give their input into this. And you see people complaining about how ICANN does certain things and those terrible people and ICANN of breaking whatever. I don't know, maybe it's just to look at, you know, in the UK, they have the Campaign for Plain English, or I can't remember what the hell it's called. You may be familiar with it. They do a kind of a quality mark on websites that meet that standard. I don't know, is Kelly here? Kelly, you're down there. Kelly has experience at Nominet, who do a lot of that stuff. Or Gordon could speak to that, because I think Gordon was on the was a non-exec director of Nominet. So I'm just going to throw that over to you guys, and then back to Volga.
I have been asked, could I put our contract into plain English? I explained, probably not, because it's an ICANN contract, and a Nominet contract is very difficult. But yeah, there is a standard, but I've not done it yet.
Volker.
One thing that might bear looking into is not how to get to public comments, but also how the public comments are then summarized and interpreted. For example, if you look at various public comment periods that have ended in the last year, looking at the summarization and the interpretation of the public comments when they're then prepared for board consumption, there seemed to me that some of those public comments were there was a certain tendency in how certain comments were treated and other comments were treated, so that the board decision was led to in a certain way. For example, the Strawman comes to mind. If you look at the public comments and how these public comments were summarized, there was a very clear tendency that a certain result was favored. At least that it seemed that way to me.
Alan?
You know, Volker, thank you. You just gave one example. If you can take a little bit of time perhaps later and document in a note to us a couple of examples where you saw that kind of, may I say, bias or choosing to ignore certain things, it would be really helpful. If we're making any strong recommendations, facts and documentable things are a lot easier than perceptions matter, but facts are more compelling.
Brian?
If I could try to stir a little bit of comment. One of the issues we're focused on and we're hearing a lot about is cross-community deliberations. And in fact, under our charter, under the AOC, that's an issue that we have to look at, the dynamic of that. Among things you already know is, you know, with respect to the PDP process, a GACS advice or input coming into that process, when does it come in, how does it come in, a known issue. In the past, ALAC participation, although it seems as though there's been some progress on that front in terms of ALAC's participation, the PDP. This is a critical issue that we're hearing a lot about, we're going to focus on. Be interested to hear your views about how well cross-community deliberations are working on the one hand. Are there other issues we should be aware of? And do you have suggestions as to how it might be improved?
Anybody else have anything to add? James? Crickets. Okay, thank you. So where can we submit comments on all this?
We have a public wiki within the ICANN website. If you go to Accountability and Transparency, ATRT2 is identified. We have a public wiki link there. And that's where you can submit comments. Again, anything you have to offer by mid-September would be a good time to factor into our proposed draft recommendations that come out in October. Then you'll have a second bite of the apple of public comments on those.
Alan.
Yeah, we just realized today that the public mailing list we've been talking about sending things to was never set up. It will be set up before the end of today, and it will be on our wiki.
Thanks, guys. Oh, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Michele. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. Just a formal note to our ATRT2 chair that our sheets don't actually have our wiki address. And that might be something we might wish to use in the future.
Okay, I think that's if Brian or one of you wants to send me on links to those.
That's what I was going to suggest.
I can, yeah, we follow. I can post it onto our list.
We'll send a link to all the ACs and SOs. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you. Next up, we have Mr. Tom Barrett. You have to liaise with.
Do you have a slide for you? is the PDF you sent the other day.
Okay, Tom is going to be talking about the Registrar Stakeholder Group bylaws. We're just sorting out a few technical difficulties. Tom, do you want to start off?
If you're on the registrar list, I sent out an outline of my notes that I'll cover today. I don't want to necessarily, So in those notes, I basically described the process we've followed so far to revise these bylaws. And all of you have participated in one way or the other. You've seen the survey that we conducted last December and January. The proposed amendments were circulated on July 2nd, and there was a healthy debate on July 2nd about those amendments. What I want to talk about is certainly what my philosophy was going into this process and some observations about it, and then in terms of what the next steps might be. The existing, for example, I think every meeting there's been a comment, offhand comment by someone saying, oh, that bylaw is obsolete, or that bylaw should be changed. And it stayed in place because I guess there wasn't a formal effort to overhaul the bylaws. And as it occurred to me, maybe that's not the right approach to this. It may not be as efficient, but any individual member of the constituency can offer a motion to change one or more parts of the bylaws. So rather than having to say we're going to change all the bylaws that haven't been revised for years, you know, we should probably encourage individual members to propose motions to change a particular clause in the bylaws that they're not happy with. And that way, we don't get stuck down to a 12-year who-is type of PDP because it's all or nothing in terms of revising the bylaws. So I have proposed six. It's not meant to be a comprehensive overhaul of the bylaws. There are just six issues that I've gleaned from the survey and so forth. You could probably identify more of your own, in which case I would suggest you offer those as a motion, as a new amendment to the bylaws. And if we can catch them all in this round, great. If not, then you know we catch them in 3 months or 6 months. But I think that divide and conquer approach will allow us to at least move forward on some of these issues, even though we don't have a perfect 2013 version of the bylaws. Any comments on that? Anyone disagree? Cool.
Sorry, Tom, I'll just actually ask a simple question. So, for example, let's say at the moment we have a situation where we have to follow this rather long, protracted process for elections. So it would be possible for a member to say, look, this is insane, can we shorten the timelines on this, or decide that, you know, if somebody is running unopposed, that we don't actually have to go through the entire process.
Right. So, Matt suggested I review the rules of procedure, which I have, and it's very clear that any member of the stakeholder group can propose a motion that for any number of things, but one of which is to a change in the bylaws. So, if there's one little nit you don't like in the bylaws, you should take it upon yourself to propose a motion to change that, right? And I think that incremental way will move forward. Because otherwise, if it's an all or nothing affair, this could drag on for months.
Okay, thanks for the clarification. Okay, so I have Mr. Bladel.
So, and maybe I'm not fully understanding this, but so we're suggesting we kind of take an iterative approach to reforming our bylaws. I missed this part of the conversation.
So I've proposed six amendments.
Yes.
And we had a healthy debate.
Yeah.
And it was considered informal because I had not received endorsements yet per the rules of procedure, which I have now received, right? So now the secretary can publish these amendments for a formal debate. So out of that debate can come friendly amendments to what I proposed. There could be unfriendly amendments. There could be unrelated amendments.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, let's
And we could accept these individually or as a package?
Right.
Or
the way I understand the rules of procedure, each amendment is voted on separately.
Okay.
It's not one vote for all six. There's six votes right now.
Okay.
If you guys want to propose four more, we'll have 10 votes.
Okay. So the only concern I had, and I don't know, I'm not as close to this as you are, so I don't know how real this is or not, but at some point, the GNSO we may all have to look at the definition of our stakeholder groups or our constituencies, and what comes out of this process is going to determine whether, you know, we're an integral constituency in the next life of the GNSO, right? Or we could be something completely different, or we could be mixed in with brands or mixed in with hybrid registries or whatever. I mean, all of that is going to determine on how well we do this part, right? And how quickly.
It could be, yeah.
Okay.
So this is important.
This is important stuff. This is pretty dry, I understand, but I'm trying to, like, get everybody out of their lunch food comas here. This is, like, scary stuff. We could be, like, written out of existence if we don't do this
maybe,
right.
And maybe you could address, you know, Tim had some comments back on July 2nd about we might be violating our charter. Let's be careful we don't violate. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, that was kind of the basis of my concern, and I don't fully understand where Tim was going with that, and I was hoping that he could be on the call, but I think it's more along the lines of, you know, we have to have a defensible charter, you know, now and in the next round. Otherwise, it could be smacked down, and then the registrar's stakeholder group would be.
Are the bylaws our charter, or is there another document?
So I understand that to be a different, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to answer it. But remember, like, does anybody remember there was a bit of a issue with the NCUC about 2 years ago? And some different, you know, there was a couple of different groups calling themselves the NCUC or something like that, and they were all kind of wrestling for. Yeah, okay, so that could happen here. There's nothing that says now just because you have a registrar contract, you are automatically a registrar, and it's a pass-fail, because there's a lot of hybrid organizations being proposed or vertically integrated organizations, and, you know, we're trying to head that crisis off, you know, now, and I think, I really encourage not only getting involved with this, but, you know, let we do it quickly. And I encourage myself to get smarter about this so I can answer your follow-up questions, because I don't have those answers.
I've noted the point to see if the bylaws define our charter, if there's a separate document. Elliot?
Yeah, I want to follow up on James's point. First, just some background. I think, James, you're referring to that whole, you know, IOC-led thing inside of non-commercials, where they wanted to have a separate non-commercial group and try and split the vote that the non-commercials brought to the GNSO. On what James is talking about, I made extensive comments in the survey that Tom put out that didn't really make it into the process, and I think that's appropriate, because what I was saying was a variation of James's point, which was, you know, that this discussion is great, I think it's useful, but it's missing the much bigger issue, the one that's much more germane for us, and that is this: what is a registrar point? And I do believe we have to get out in front of it. And James, I would say to you, you know, I don't think we can look to, you know, this specific process that Tom has done all this good work on and that people have, you know, sort of input into. It doesn't address this problem at all. And I think we have to address this problem separately. And let me put a finer point on the problem. I think that the most important thing in GNSO reform is we've all been sucked into a bit of language historically, which is contracted versus non-contracted parties. That was a convenient description of the previous GNSO reform that no longer applies, I would argue. And I don't believe we should be bound by it in the way we're approaching this, what is a registrar problem. You know, I think, James, what we have to do, and, you know, and I'm happy, again, for Adam, and
you know, take notes here.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, and all the registrars in this room who deal with end users, who sell domain names to end users, need to get together and possibly redefine the constituency. And maybe that does mean we break into two different groups. And I think we have to do that now, and I think the question is going to be, you know, that we'll have to, you know, the people who are interested in that issue, which I would argue is the vast majority of people in this room, and the vast majority, you know, in the 99.9% of G's under management, you know, if we're looking at it from a names perspective, you know, we're going to have to make a decision as to whether what we want to put into this room is that we reform our bylaws of what this existing registrar constituency is, such that it relates to entities, registrars who provide names to end users, or whether we step outside of this room and define something new. Because I can tell you, you know, I think it's absolutely right. You only vote in one constituency. And I can also absolutely tell you the only constituency I want to vote in is one that deals with registrars who sell domain names to end users. You know, we've already had some smaller issues inside of this room where some registrars had different interests that weren't necessarily those of registrants who primarily sell to end users. I think that's been fine because it's been small and bounded, but that is not going to be the problem going forward. So, you know, we do need to make a decision. I think it's a little bit separate from this, but we should do it. We should at least start to talk about that now. And, you know, Michaela, Jen, you know, you guys really have to, you know, to help us with this, where we talk about how we're going to deal with this, because it's either, again, you know, this group reforms itself and slightly narrows its charter, or, you know, a bunch of us need to pick up our toys and go play in another sandbox.
And I assume that process matters, how we approach this, in the sense that,
you know,
it'll be up for public scrutiny. Did we follow our defined process? Does that matter?
Sure, but I think I think that form follows substance. And of course, you know, you can't do anything that's just made up and just completely violates process. But I think we've got to not be bound by our process. There's so many areas, as we saw in our previous compliance discussion, that are open to interpretation. And I think we need to figure out what we need as a group and really push forward with that.
I think that's a good point, but we also, it'd be, I think, helpful to get some input from Mike about what staff thinks the process. Once we make a decision, are they going to have to publish it for comment like the registry bylaws were published? Is that a defined process according to staff, or does that not exist for registrars?
So this is Mike. This is a little bit outside my area of expertise, but I did a little bit of research on it previously. And so I understand that there's a board approval or confirmation process involved when a stakeholder group changes its charter. There's the process, though, for changing the charter is not spelled out in ICANN's bylaws. So there's been some staff process, and you referred to the one that the registries have done. And so, you know, my understanding is it would be sort of similar to that, but I don't know much more detail other than that.
Okay. So we have a rules of procedure for these amendments. Do we want to follow those? Are we suggesting? We don't know if anyone. No one knows if there's another document called the charter. Right. We've got to verify that.
Yes.
So apparently, if someone wants to revise the charter, that would be they can make a motion for that and propose new language or form a working group to debate what that should be. But what should our process be or next steps be going forward?
I'm looking to the guy in the suit and tie.
Gee, thanks. I think the obvious first step would be to see if we can track down what the original charter is. Mm-hmm. Because obviously we can't put ourselves in a position where we propose something that's in conflict with that. I mean, based on what Tom and others have been saying, or have I missed something?
Well, yeah, I think you have. I mean, I think that this is about looking at our charter and redefining it. I mean, I think that, you know, we have a charter that was driven primarily in the 1999 context of encouraging, you know, we went from a world of monopoly in a single registrar to a world of competition, and so much of the original charter was focused on making sure that the big bad monopoly didn't crush the competitors, and there was no sense of a concept that, you know, that a registrar was anything but an entity who sold domain names to end users. You know, that's something that's evolved. So, you know, we're in green space here. You know, we got the machete out and we're hacking the vines.
Okay. I mean, well, I'm not even too sure what the next step is here, really.
I think the next step is for us to review and then propose a working group.
Yeah, that probably makes more sense. I think, yeah, what Jennifer's saying makes most sense. I mean, if we can look at what the current document states, then we can see what potentially needs to be changed and then put together some kind of working group on that. However, it's a simpler thing to be able to address some of the existing bylaws. I don't think there's any reason for us to delay doing that because surely the severe brokenness, say, for example, around the election process is something which causes us more headaches than it actually resolves. And I know from my previous experience as secretary that it caused me more headaches than I could have done with it. I mean, poor Matt wanted to escape the chair and couldn't. He had to wait. How long did it take us, Matt? 4 weeks or something? End to end? You know, it's a bit silly.
You know, and I agree with that, and I appreciate that we did kind of have to roofie you to take this position. And so, but you know, the one thing I really want to just caution us, and I think what you've said is right. You know, there's such a human condition, whether it's in politics or in business or in a situation like this, to avoid the big hairy problems, and this is a big hairy problem, and I really think that what we can't do, you know, I feel like this is, you know, I've talked about this in a few different meetings now, this issue, and I just feel like we're out of time, and we need to take up the cudgel around this big hairy problem. It is scary. It is green space. It is, you know, undetermined in terms of the way that staff will feel about it. It's undetermined in the way that the board will feel about it. And it's undetermined as to how we in the room will feel about it. But I think that we just can't be, you know, afraid of it any longer. And it's natural for us to be afraid of it, but I think we don't have the luxury anymore.
Elliot, I hope you will be volunteering to help with this.
I will be volunteering people to help with this. No, I'm certainly going to, you know, I'm going to try and lend a hand around this, yes.
I think one of the things is that with regard to actually a lot of the volunteer work in general, I mean, not just specifically this, I think one of the things we do need to do a slightly better job of is getting people who have a wealth of experience and knowledge, being able to tap that without dragging them into an 18-month PDP or whatever, because you know, I can understand that Elliot might not want to commit himself to an 18-month PDP, he's more than happy to throw Graeme or somebody else in. But Graeme, no disrespect, wouldn't have some of the knowledge that you have. And being able to get that, I think, is very, very important. I mean, we can discount it and disagree with it, of course, but, you know, getting it is a good start. Thanks.
So the big elephant in the room here is that there are current members who have been very active over the years that probably don't qualify under your new definition, right?
So we have it may
to,
or may not.
I so mean, we have to just, we have to say, do they get grandfathered? Are they out? Do they have a special new group that they form? So I think that's the main point of contention for some.
No. I want to. So what you, which is fair, but I think what you did now there is kind of go to, well, let's talk about the edge cases. And I think where we really have to start on this issue is what's the core before we determine what the edge cases are. I mean, you know, I put out a simple proposition, and I'm happy to put it out in whatever form it's useful into this room, you know, that we need a constituency that represents the interests of registrars who sell domain names to end users, who are responsible for other third parties' contractual compliance, who have the interests of the broad set of internet users at their core. And then I think, you know, we need to really start with, okay, what does that constituency look like? And then I think quite rightly, Tom, you know, we can deal with the edge cases and then fall out of that. So I want you to hear me sort of agreeing with your point and maybe just moving the causality a bit or the you know, the steps.
Okay, thanks, Elliot. Tom?
Well, no, I think this has been very useful. And so it sounds like there's still some interest in trying to fix some of the broken parts of the bylaws. And so we should probably follow the rules of procedure to open up that debate, have people propose some other amendments that they think need addressing in the bylaws. And it sounds like you need a whole new working group to be formed to address this bigger issue. Right? So you need someone to volunteer to lead that.
John, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, I agree with what Elliot just said, and not representing a registrar that has, you know, retail customers. You know, there's no real requirement to warp the bylaws around, you know, what are unusual cases relative to everyone else in the room. Now, this has always been an organization and a group of people where a good idea is a good idea, regardless of whether it won a vote or, you know, or had a vote, as long as it has a voice.
Okay. Point taken. Yeah.
Sorry, I have a stupid question. Elliot, when you say registrars that sell domain names to end users, what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it means, you know, what it says on its face, that they are generally third parties, that they are not, you know, so and Matt, to be clear, I think, you know, just to take away any personalization of it, you know, my description fits a lot more, or what I think, you know, in the future, you know, gets separated in interest is a lot more, you know, John's situation than your situation. Your situation where, you know, you have registrants, they are third parties, they happen to line up with the IPC, and I don't like that. That's different. Maybe we should catch that. Maybe we shouldn't. I don't know. But you know, I'm dealing with the bigger issue.
I thought. Yeah. But then I heard John say something about retail,
semantics.
I wanted to make sure that what I thought you were talking about actually was what you were talking about. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else on this? Right, who would like to volunteer to spearhead this movement?
Adam went to the washroom in advance of you asking that question.
Boy, that's pretty gutsy, just to leave your fate in someone else's hands. Okay.
Are you able to delegate your staff to these things, Elliot, when they're out of the room?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I'd love to see, and I don't mind us taking a very active role in this, maybe leading it. You know, I'd love to hear from John and from Jeff and from Jen, you know, the other large third-party registrars, and, you know, then from others. I mean, maybe there's a straw man around this that we could, you know, just get a sense of, you know, of what people are thinking. But, you know, I mean, I'd love, you know, James to say, you know, yeah, boy, I'm really interested in this, and Jeff to say, and Jen to say, I'm really interested in this, and, you know, others who are similarly sort of going to deal with this. And I'm less worried about, you know, who's leading it, and more that, you know, is there kind of a, you know, an underswell for it?
I agree with Elliot, and I volunteer to assist with leading the charter.
Oh, awesome.
I'm volunteering as well.
Okay, so that two. So we can have James.
We will be deeply involved.
Jennifer.
The royal we will be deeply involved.
Chair, I think that might be very interesting to join Elliot in that effort.
Okay. Jennifer,
by the way, Mohammed is so good because he just actually put me in front of the effort as he joined it. That was awesome. You know, I want to call out that smooth move right there.
Anybody else want to volunteer to assist in this wonderful effort?
I throw my hat in the ring.
Thanks, Volker.
So in the spirit of volunteering other people, this is Mike. One of my coworkers, Rob Hogarth in the policy department, you know, he can be your point person for things like amending the charter. So I'd be happy to volunteer him since he's not in the room.
Yeah, Marika has already suggested we liaise with him, so we will be doing that. Okay, I think we might want to wrap this up since we have to migrate to meet with the board. It's in Hall 6, which is where the opening session was yesterday, so that means it's all the way down. So you go out the doors here, and you turn left, and keep on walking. So I think we can close the session up and stop the recording. Thank you.